listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Villanova School of Business. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Jeff Mack, Newmark Knight, Frank, Ethan Milrod, GoTo, Peter Snelling, Merrill Lynch, Andrew Hanlon, Hanlon Creative, Tim Walters, Sabre Systems, Anthony Martinelli, Andis Health Benefits, Brian Sulpizio, Inception Group, Jennifer Popolak, Mattioni, and Dean Russell, Villanova School of Business. Jeffrey, can you give us a rundown on who we have on the air today?
Sure, Herb, and I'd first like to thank Joyce Russell. Joyce is the Dean of the Business School here at Villanova. We have Paul Ciarto. Paul is the CEO of DataPella. Joe Mirabile is the President and CEO of USSC Group. Doug Claffey is here today, CEO of Energage. And Ira Brown, Regional President, M&T Bank.
Excellent. Let's get to know our first guest, Paul Ciarto, CEO of DataPella. Paul, what is DataPella?
DataPella is a consulting company that focuses on minimizing digital disruption for Fortune companies.
Have you ever started any other businesses?
I did, sir.
How many?
I'm on my 27th.
Ooh, 27. Boy, you're a driven kind of guy. How young were you when you started in business trading stuff or making money?
I would say my money-making skills began at the ripe age of 4 years
old. What were you doing?
I was bartering for toys.
What do you mean you were bartering for toys?
Well, other kids had toys. I wanted toys, so I figured out a way to get them.
You were bartering different things different toys. Uh-huh. All right. You understand commerce. All right. Anthony.
Paul, where are you from?
From Union, New Jersey.
And how many brothers and sisters?
2 brothers, older, younger.
So tell us about what was unique about your childhood.
So unique about my childhood is that by the time I was 17, I moved 26 times, and my brothers and I spent most of our times hiding in closets.
Why?
Because my father was an abusive alcoholic and drug user and ex-crazy Marine.
Well, your dad was a Marine who was also an alcoholic and a drug abuser, and it was a pretty terrifying childhood, huh?
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. Brian?
Paul, you mentioned the word survived earlier. What do you mean by that, you survived?
So when I say survive, it's about, living, getting away from the abusive side of my the structure that was around me, and two, surviving, finding money and ways to get the things you needed in life.
Mm-hmm. But you said you sold a lot of companies. You sold 7 companies, is that
correct?
Right?
Correct, yes.
So some would say survival is more of a 9-to-5 job and putting food on the table. What do you really mean when you say survival?
No, survival is more of a 24-hour job. So you got to understand. I mean, we work to make money. We live to survive. So
Jeffrey?
Paul, talking about your dad and the influence he had, how did he impact your life? And you mentioned he was kind of a mentor to you, but what do you mean by that?
I would say even through the abuse, the craziness, he was one of my greatest mentors. He taught me everything not to do in life. So, I mean, failure is something we can learn on our own, but also watching people with what they do, the failures that they commit, you learn what not to do in life.
So what do you take from him at DataPella every day to work that you either do or you don't do with your
customers? To appreciate and love the people around me.
Pardon me?
To appreciate and love the people around me.
What do you mean?
So you got to understand, I mean, to build relationships, you need to nurture those relationships. I mean, if you constantly abuse the relationship, you're going to destroy those relationships around you. And you're
wait. Give me that again. And how'd you learn that?
I learned that from watching my father destroy relationships.
And you learned what?
To nurture relationships. I mean, the more you nurture, the more they thrive, the greater the success, the greater the teams you're going to build.
I'm not arguing with you. You've started 25 businesses or 28 businesses.
27.
Excuse me,
Paul,
Ethan.
That's a number.
Paul, how about mom? What was mom like, and what kind of effect did she have on you?
My mom was more or less, she was working to help us survive, and she would pretty much get us up at 5 a.m. She would drop us off at a care provider. She would pick us up at 11 p.m. or midnight.
So what impact did that have on you?
The impact it had on me was you need to work your butt off to survive in life. So,
Drew?
Paul, you obviously had somewhat of a dark upbringing and some skeletons in the closet. I'm just curious when you knew there was a ray of hope, a ray of light out there in hope.
So I would say the big transition for me was when I was about 12 years old. My father attempted first-degree murder on my mother. He came to my our apartment in Irvington, New Jersey, shot 3 times through the window at 3 a.m. in the morning and woke us up. We didn't know what the hell was going on. And next thing you know, he had 7 counts against him for putting a bomb in her car, trafficking drugs, stuff like that.
And in that dark time, you did find hope, though, and knew there was a better way.
Well, you got to understand, when you spend the first 12, 13 years of your life running from abuse and, you know, finding ways to survive the abuse and also trying to survive to live, you know, from a monetary standpoint, I mean, when you take one of those major factors out of the equation, I mean, life becomes a lot easier.
Jennifer? Paul, having found 27 companies and selling some of them, what motivates you to keep going any further at this point?
Honestly, it's giving back. It's I see opportunity around me. It's just the constant progression and the instinct to survive, and helping those around me learn that instinct to survive, and, you know, doing things others just can't.
Who's got the next question?
So you said you were a middle child?
Yes, ma'am.
How did that impact what happened to you and your success today?
So I would say I'd say most middle children are in a unique position. You have the older brother, you have the younger brother, to where my older brother wasn't the commanding type taking charge. My younger brother needed a lot of guidance. So, you know, when my older brother wasn't there, I assisted the family with what we needed. When my younger brother needed, you know, support and mentoring and guidance, I was there.
Boy, you're all about relationships.
Yes,
Peter?
Sir.
Paul, this very rough experience you had shaped this independence. How does that serve you today, your instinct for independence?
I would say it's less about independence. It's actually identifying quality resources to build, you know, success. And the thing is, when you're young, you don't have anyone around you. You start latching on to people and resources to build successes. Right. And that's what I'm about. I'm about building teams and successful.
Wait. So at the core of you, I mean, in spite of all this trauma, or in fact, because of all this trauma, you've learned who you can depend on for what and when and how?
Well, I've learned my deficiencies in life, and I've learned to leverage the resources that I have, the scarcity of the resources that I have, to kind of thrive. So what I do is if there's something I don't have, I find someone who has it, and I figure out how to leverage their value.
So you're a natural reader of people. You get an instinct regarding people?
Instinctual entrepreneurship.
But yes. Wait a minute. It says here you started 27 companies. You're telling me your greatest strength is reading people?
Yes, sir. Identifying gaps in opportunity. So.
Wow. Next question. Who's got it?
Paul, I would say you would have a right to be angry, but you seem to have been able to turn that anger into energy. Tell us about that.
I mean, what is anger? Anger is a waste of time. I mean, it's like there's no reason to be angry at my father, my mother, the situation. I mean, my focus is on, you know, progression. So,
Ethan, Paul, going back to speaking about giving back, I mean, you've started 27 companies, but you also teach.
I do.
Why do you do that?
I teach, and I also volunteer a lot of my time, any free time that I have. I teach to give back. I mean, there's a lot of children, a lot of people, a lot of adults that have gone through similar circumstances, and they don't have the guidance that, you know, I wish I had. So, you know, I'm trying to give back what I didn't have.
So for our listening audience, especially the younger listeners, what lessons would you give them?
I mean, the first thing I would say is never believe you can be broken. The fact is, if you continue to fight, you continue to push, you continue to take a step forward. It's kind of the military mentality when you're in a kind of a battle. Once you give up, you know, no matter how many times you've been shot, I mean, that's when the war ends. So
Paul, you're a survivor, obviously, but
yes,
you're
sir.
Also, there's an element of freewheeling there. Did the military help channel discipline for you?
When I was 17, I got in a little trouble. I got into a fight, cracked someone's skull. A judge told me I'm either going to go to jail or go into the military. So I chose the military. And I went in to be a nuclear engineer. And next thing you know, my RDC recruit division commander said, "Hey, you got a bad attitude. I'm going to fix that." And that's what he did.
Brian?
Paul, it sounds remarkable. I mean, all the things that you've accomplished.
Well, there's people that have had much worse lives than myself.
Yeah. I mean, to be able to accomplish that in and of itself, what do you do for your downtime?
So my downtime, I am a professional martial artist. So when I'm not around, I am teaching children and teaching adults how to build confidence by synchronizing their minds and body.
Paul, mom's still in Union, New Jersey?
She's not. She's actually in a skip pack, I believe.
Has she seen the success that you've achieved?
She has, but we are not on good relations. So,
Are your brothers surprised you turned out the way you have?
My brother, one of them was a chronic heroin user, and the other one kind of distanced himself from myself.
Paul, what's the website address for this organization called Datapella?
So, web address is datapella.com, but the better website is neverbrokenbook.com.
Let me have that one more time.
Neverbrokenbook.com.
Uh-huh. What's that all about, real quickly?
So, in September, I'm releasing a book on something I like to call instinctual entrepreneurship that goes through applying entrepreneurship, that anyone could be an entrepreneur.
This is Herb Cohn. This has been, we'll be back in a moment right after this break. And your name and organization is?
Joyce Russell. I'm the Helen and William O'Toole Dean of the Villanova School of Business.
And what makes the Villanova School of Business special?
Well, I think we're not just another business school. We really have a tagline that we live, which is building business leaders for a better world. So in our undergraduate and our whole portfolio of graduate programs, we really are focusing on students getting a strong ROI as it deals with the career, but also strong ROI as it deals with giving back to the community and the world, because we're at a critical point in life where we really need ethical business leaders.
So the Villanova School of Business is interested in developing the individual, and part of that's their own individual talents, but also as part of the community. Am I understanding that correctly?
That's correct. So as part of the curriculum, whether it's for undergrads or grads, they do a lot of community service. They do what's called a social enterprise consulting practicum, where they do strategy and a lot of business skills and give back to a lot of nonprofits.
Why is this so important to you? Why does this turn you on as the dean of the business school?
Because otherwise we'd just be another business school, and there's a lot of business schools. We're highly accredited. We're top ranked. But I think in order to really make a difference in the world and have a positive impact, we really want to create people who care about the world and what is their contribution to the world.
And this is really pretty core to you, too. I mean, it sounds to me like you're rather passionate about this
mission. I am very passionate about it.
And this is a mission that, I mean, this lives throughout the whole organization.
Yeah, it's all part of Villanova University. We're an Augustinian Catholic community, which is a very welcoming, inclusive community where we were founded based on Irish immigrants. And so we really care about giving people opportunity.
Wow. Boy, it goes right through the core. What's the website address at Villanova University?
The website address is business.villanova.edu.
Let me have that one more time.
business.villanova.edu.
And we've been speaking with Dean Joyce Russell, Dean of Villanova School of Business. And your name and company is?
Peter Snelling with Merrill Lynch.
And Peter, what do you do for a living?
Well, our group provides wealth management and retirement planning services for companies, their employees, and executives.
So you're helping companies, their employees, and their executives with their wealth management. And what kind of stuff does that encompass?
Well, we focus on goals-based wealth management, which really means trying to find what is most important to people about their money and then proposing solutions to meet their needs.
When you say helping them with their money, so it's like, so they're planning for marriage and they're planning for anniversaries and weddings.
Educating children, retirement, helping
the whole life
parents, helping
money.
Children.
What's the website address of this organization?
It's ml.com.
And let me have your name one more time.
Peter Snelling with Merrill Lynch.
Peter Snelling with Merrill Lynch. And the website address one last time?
Is ml.com.
ml.com. And this has been your business spotlight. We'll be back in a moment. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohn, and we'd like to introduce Joe Mirabli, who is president and CEO of an organization known as USSC Group. Joe, what is USSC Group? What are you guys doing?
USSC Group is a safety, survivability, and technology company. We make and manufacture seating, fire suppression systems, and restraint systems to transport people more safely in wheeled and track vehicles.
How large or how small is the company?
We have around 300 employees in Exton, PA, and through a contract manufacturer, around 500 in Chicago.
Where are you from originally?
From Bluebell, Pennsylvania.
And you mentioned that you had a special family. Tell us about your family.
Have a great immigrant Italian family.
Immigrant. So are you first generation, your parents first generation, or was it grandparents?
My grandparents were the first generation.
Uh-huh. Which grandparent had the greatest influence on you?
My father's father had a dramatic impact on me.
Why?
A very hardworking man, very... set or the tone for our family.
What do you mean he set the tone for the family? What are you talking about?
For both my father and I think he taught work ethic and taught us to...
How'd you learn work ethic?
Watched my father go to work before I woke up every morning and usually come home after I was asleep.
How young were you when you were discussing business with your grandfather?
As long as I can remember.
Really? I mean, as a little kid, you were talking business with your grandfather?
My grandfather, my father, it's what they valued. It's what they talked about as long as I can remember.
What did they value?
They valued being good businessmen.
Uh-huh. Drew?
Joe, in Norristown, in the surrounding area, the Mirabile name has a certain air of gravitas that commands respect. And I'm just curious what that means to you.
I think family name's always been incredibly important to us because from a very early age, I was told it was all that we had when we came here, and to do business and conduct yourself in a way that would always bring respect to our family name.
And do you feel like you bring that to the business you run today?
I do everything possible to do so.
Jeffrey?
Joe, you had an interesting work opportunity at a young age, and I think the conversation with your grandfather about you should start working as young as possible. What was your first internship that you really had in corporate America?
At 13 years old, I was given the opportunity to intern for Advana Corporation by Dennis Alter.
And what was that like? What did you do every day?
I started by getting coffee every day. I worked there and any free time I had from the age of 13 to the age of 20 in various departments in the company.
What did you do differently than the other interns and kids growing up in that work?
I tried really hard when I was there and spent a lot of time with great leaders at that company.
Let you sit at the boardroom table, didn't they? Exposed you to everything. And I'm wondering if one of the reasons a successful entrepreneur exposed you to everything, let you sit at the table, was because of the conversations you had at a young age with your grandfather.
I certainly think they saw something to continue to offer me those opportunities and exposure at an extremely young age.
Mm-hmm. Ethan?
Joe, earlier in the green room, you said something that talent's worth one thing, but hard work is worth double. Who taught you that, and what effect has that had on you?
I've always found that throughout my entire career, you can outwork others who are more talented. So you can catch them in life if you outwork them.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe, you mentioned that at a young age, you were a tennis player, and you mentioned you weren't a very good tennis player, yet you were ranked number one in the state. How did that happen?
Purely through hard work. I was told by my father that if you hit more balls than the other guy, you would beat him eventually.
Mm-hmm. Brian?
So your work ethic is very clear to hear, and you started listening at an early age to your grandfather and father about business. How do you feel that listening influences your approach to customers today?
I think it's incredibly important in our business and in all businesses to listen to our customers. We don't make any products that are me-too products. We create customer solutions. And in order to do that, you have to really hear the voice of your customer and try to solve their problem.
Joyce?
So you talked a lot about hard work, but also why law? Why did you go into law?
Sure. So I pursued education because my grandfather from an early age taught me that he didn't have education and that education would create the ability to do more things and be more successful. So from pursuing college and then pursuing a JD MBA and an LLM, I found that to be the case.
Joe, your grandfather said your name is all you have. And growing up in an immigrant family, did you have something to prove?
I think we always feel like we had something to prove, and I carry that with me every day. I think having a chip on your shoulder, you know, helps you to continue to try to perform day in and day out.
Joe, you mentioned earlier when we were talking that you're the oldest of three siblings. Being an Italian immigrant family and being the oldest, did that force you to have to succeed more, put more pressure on you?
I think it's a pressure that you are always going to be the one to take care of your family. So as the oldest child, the expectation is you take care of your siblings and you take care of your family no matter what. And I think I carry that with me today.
Whoa. Give me that again.
I think it's ingrained in you from an early age as the eldest son of an Italian family that you will take care of your siblings and take care of your family no matter what.
That goes back to Drew's question about the family name. And there really is a need. It sounds to me like there really is a culture in the family that's pervasive, and you're really taking it the next step, aren't you?
We succeed together, we don't succeed at all is certainly something we follow in our family.
Give me that again.
We succeed together, we don't succeed at all.
So it's really take care of the family, keep the family together.
Absolutely.
Who's got the next question?
Speaking about family, how about mom? I think you earlier on you called her your backstop. What did you mean by that?
A tremendous influence in my life. Showed you just great empathy at every turn in my life. You know, when I would fall down, she would be the one to pick me up.
Joe, speaking of tennis, you know, when you stepped out into a big game, big match, how did that feel?
Greatest feeling in the world. So when you're in a fight in a deep competitive moment, I find some of the most clarity you can find in the deepest competitive moments.
And do you find that that flow and that clarity makes you a better CEO?
I think you can find some of those same moments doing business. I think when business and business is growing and you're in the depth and you're working as hard as you can, I think you can find some of those same moments.
Joe, you're a young father. You said you had a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old.
I do.
What are their names?
My son's name is Robert Joseph Mirabli after my father, and my daughter's name is Mia Lauren Maria Mirabli.
So what are the similarities between being a dad and a CEO?
My wife told me that you're not the CEO of this house, so there's not many.
That's one difference. What else?
You know, I think it's my goal to try to find as much balance through work and family as possible, and I try to teach my kids as much as I possibly can about, you know, being together, staying as a family, and how important that is.
What have you learned from them, being a dad?
I've learned that they are in charge, so...
Mm-hmm. What's the best part of your job?
The best part of my job is the people at our company. I mean, we have a very family-oriented culture there, and the people that have been there for a very long time and the people who we now see come here, it's really a spread of all different levels, types, creeds. It's a very mixed environment. It's a tremendous culture to be a part of.
So you didn't found the business. You were brought in to take the business to the next level. Am I correct about that?
That's correct.
How young were you when you were taking things to the next level?
I started with the business when I was about 24 years old.
No, I mean in your childhood, 8 to 14, when were you taking things to the next level? Did you build the Boy Scout troop? Did you build the sports team? What were you doing there taking things to the next level?
I think working and training while being at school, so working for Advanta Corporation and training to be a better tennis player as well as going to school, that influence was taking it to the next level very early age. The amount of hours spent on the tennis court between 4 and 6 hours a day was a great life lesson.
You were spending between 4 and 6 hours a day on the tennis court, and you think that prepared you for your business career?
Absolutely. There's a great redundancy about practice. I'm a big believer in 10,000 hours of practice, and you can become an expert in something. And I started on that path at a very young age.
Huh. So you believe persistence, and you know, really get it right, really work at it. And is that the flow that Drew was talking about? You know, when you're in the flow of stuff,
persistence, grit, and hard work above all.
Persistence, grit, and hard work above all. Is Grandpa still around? Your grandfather?
Grandpa has passed.
Uh-huh. How long ago did he pass?
He passed when I was in first year of law school.
Uh-huh. How do you think he'd feel if he was looking down right now about the success that you're enjoying?
I hope very much that he would be proud of, you know, what I've done and how I've carried myself.
That's the next question. Why do you think he'd be proud?
I hope he would feel that we've done, you know, for the family name, what he's taught and what he set out as our core values.
I was waiting for you to tell me because of what you've accomplished, but that's not what you've just said. You just told me it was about, give me that again, about the family stuff.
I think it's about our family name and our core values and, you know, staying true to what the teachings were.
I got it. I get it loud and clear. You're a family kind of guy. It's not me. It's the family. What's the website address of this organization known as USSC Group?
USSCseating.com.
Let me have that one more time.
USSCseating.com.
USSCseating.com. We've been speaking with Joe Mirabli, President and CEO of USSC Group, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website. It's executiveleadersradio.com. Learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment, right after this break. Want to help building your business with help from this show's CEOs? Our CEOs can help you uncover more opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that. They've succeeded in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars, and some are available to advise you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. The same CEOs you've heard on the show for 10 years may be willing to help you build your business, uncover new opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that, succeeding in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars. And some are available to advise you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. And your name is?
Hank Boyer, Boyer Management Group.
And Hank, I hear that half the workforce is looking for a new job nowadays. What's going on there?
Well, there's a couple of things. The economy's booming right now, and there's been, for the last 10 years, a pent-up desire to change jobs. So that's now coming about because the economy's booming. And employers are very aggressive in poaching talent from other companies.
So what's that mean for employers, the fact that the economy's booming and that some folks have a pent-up desire to change jobs and, you know, employers are poaching other employers' talent? What does that mean?
There's going to be a massive disruption here. And the first part that is going to be felt is the service levels to customers. You're losing people that are experienced, and now you're replacing them with people that don't have the experience. But then there's a huge cost to replace the talent that you lose. When you lose somebody that's even halfway decent, it's going to cost 25 to 40% of the first year's compensation just to pay for that, and that's going to precipitate a lot of pressure to fill positions, and that means bad hires, which is also a problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, so what can employers do?
Well, three things, I think. First of all, employers have to assess their risks, figure out why the talent is leaving, and it's going to be different for different organizations. They've got to implement retention programs, and that probably means retraining managers on how to do those things, and they're going to have to revise their hiring practices so that they're attracting the right people, they're getting them on board, and they're taking care of them.
So give me a quick recap of all that again.
Well, the economy is just opening up a lot of movement within the workforce today, and that's going to have some pretty bad things happen to businesses if they don't take action right now to make sure that they're not being adversely affected.
What's the website address for your organization?
Boyer Management.
Boyer.com. Let me have that one more time.
Boyer Management, B-O-Y-E-R Management.com.
And we've been speaking with Hank Boyer, Boyer Management, here on Executive Leaders Radio. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Doug Claffey, CEO of Energage. Doug, what is Energage?
Energage is a culture technology company, and we help people at all levels in organizations be intentional about their culture to achieve amazing results.
Where you from originally?
Originally from Ann Arbor, Michigan, but moved to Phoenixville here locally when I was about four.
How many brothers and sisters?
Three younger sisters.
All right, Ethan.
So, Doug, you mentioned earlier that you enjoyed playing with computers when you were younger. How young did you start doing that?
It was probably around 10 or so.
What'd you learn from working with computers?
So what I really enjoyed about them is that I could create something that I could have fun with, essentially. That was my early thing.
I think you mentioned earlier in the green room something about the intersection of technology. What was that that you can you share with that with our
listeners?
So that
came later than 10 years old, but over time I became interested in the intersection of technology, science, and people, and how those all came together.
Give me that again, the intersection of what?
Technology, science, and people.
Huh. Is that what Energage is all about?
So Energage is all about that, yeah.
What do you mean?
So we use technology and insights from neuroscience to help people work together better.
Mm-hmm. Peter?
Doug, is engagement, workplace engagement, intellectual or emotional?
It's at its root, it's emotional. It's how you feel about work.
What do you mean by that?
So engagement is whether you feel motivated, whether you feel that you want to give your best, whether you want to stay at that company. Those are all about feelings. So that rational level is the thinking side of the brain. That's not where engagement sits. It's really down in the feeling part of the brain.
Perfect. Drew?
Doug, how did you realize that culture is so critically important to organizations?
So I started out my career at GE when there were 400,000 people there, just at the time that Jack Welch had the nickname of Neutron Jack. And so he was wherever Jack came, the building stayed, but the people did not. And so I was watching people who'd been at GE for 40 years and had been loyal to it, losing their jobs. And that impact on culture was really phenomenal. I left there, then went to a very small company. So.
And that just taught you that there was a better way?
That told me that culture ultimately would determine success.
Mm-hmm. Jeffrey?
Joyce.
Yeah, I was just going to follow up on that. So your work experience has really taught you a lot about how to build this company that you have today and why it's so important from both experiences that weren't particularly great and experiences that were good.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Interesting. Jeffrey?
So back to your childhood, Doug. Your dad, you know, I think you told us he worked for the Delaware Valley Regional Planning Commission, heading the highway planning. Mom was a nurse. What do you take from mom and dad to work every day?
So from my dad, I take work ethic and just a fascination with building things. So he was building highways at work, really designing them. But at home, we were building decks and we were building projects pretty much every weekend. So lots of building. From my mom and my dad, it was all about family. So family came first. My dad was home for dinner, you know, pretty much every night during the week. And then for my mom was a nurse, and so for her it was about caring about people, and so that's an important thing to me as well at work and at home.
Mm-hmm. So you see things from 50,000 feet above. What gave you that ability to have insight to be able to advise your clients about their culture?
So so a couple experiences have been formational for me. One was being at a 400,000-person company, moving to a 6-person entrepreneurial company, and then growing that. And then I spent 3 years at McKinsey & Company working across companies all around the world and in their organization practice.
Mm-hmm. Brian?
So your work ethic of your parents and your work in workplace dynamics today, my question is, what was the culture of your family growing up?
So we were, my sisters and I fought a lot or ignored each other a lot as well. So I would say it wasn't a tight culture of the four of us. But we also camped together every summer and we had great family vacations together. So I have a lot of fond memories as well.
And you had mentioned earlier that you were seeking the approval and attention of.
That was a guess. You asked why. I said maybe that's why.
Mm-hmm. And so the idea was, Jennifer, what's your question there?
Well, having a contentious relationship with your siblings, it sounds like you mentioned earlier when we were talking, you were very competitive as well. Do you bring that competitive nature to your business with you?
I'm sure that I do, yes.
Mm-hmm. How does that show up? What's the benefit to the business of your competitive nature?
So for business, it's about making sure that you're playing to win. And so we're always playing to win.
Mm-hmm. Anthony, what are you thinking?
Doug, you mentioned McKinsey. I mean, they have a legendary mystique, McKinsey. What was the takeaway from there that's been impactful for you?
McKinsey was an amazing place to be, filled with phenomenally bright people, and it's also a great place to be from in that it's not a long-term lifestyle I recommend for anybody.
Mm-hmm. Who's got the next question?
Doug, if engagement is emotional at its core, how can it be taught? Can it be taught?
So engagement isn't something that's taught. Engagement is an environment that's create. You create an environment where people can be engaged, and then they choose whether or not to be engaged or not.
Tim, did you have a question there?
I did, Doug. So you mentioned building a lot. Your father worked with building. You worked with building computers. Today, is there anything that you build for fun other than helping companies with their culture to get results?
So my days of building at home are probably past. I'm more out mountain biking, running. That's kind of how I spend my time outside of work. at work, we're building products, and that's where I focus my building energy.
Let me ask you a question. When you're out biking or running or doing some of these individual things, are you thinking about business?
So they're not individual things. So when I'm out biking, I'm out biking with my buddies, and most of them are business leaders, and we're often talking about business.
Uh-huh. So you really enjoy business. Business is like a hobby for you.
Yeah, I love what I do, yeah.
What do you love about what you do?
I love the working with the team that I have, creating new products, using technology to scale difficult to solve difficult problems.
Mm-hmm. Jeffrey, give another question.
So, Doug, you just similar question to Joe. You have a son and two twins. What have you learned about being a father?
Really hard work trying to figure that out, and one of my greatest joys is being a father. In terms of learning,
Wait. What do you mean? One of your greatest joys is being a father? What are you talking about?
So, just very proud of my kids. The love to have them around. We're now empty nesters. One's in England. Two are juniors in college in Boston for the summer, and so we miss them. But all that time with them is very, very great memories.
Well, I'm going to ask you Jeffrey's question. What's the similarity between being a CEO and a dad?
So, not many, I'd say. Part of the challenge of being a CEO is forming a great team, so you get to pick who's on your team. Being a father, you don't get to pick who's in your family. Part of being a CEO is figuring out how to delegate and empower your team. I don't feel you're quite delegating to your family, but you certainly are empowering them and helping to shape and develop them. So I think that's where the big intersection is shaping and developing the people on your team, the people in your company, and then your kids.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly not your wife.
What's the foundation of the culture at Energage? Like, what's important for you that the employees say or take away from your business today?
So two things are at the core of it. One is our purpose, which is making the world a better place to work together. And if you asked any of our employees what our purpose is, they would be able to share that. And then also what that means for them. The second thing is our values. We have just three. They're helpfulness, open-mindedness, and teamwork. Put those three together, they spell hot. And so we always make sure that we're trying to be as hot as we can.
Interesting. Give me that again, the elements that make up hot.
Helpfulness, open-mindedness, and teamwork.
Uh-huh. And those are values that are really important to you, it sounds like. Those are what's through the course of your business experience with a huge organization and then a startup. Those are the values that you've really developed that you believe are important to build an organization, to build a team.
For our business, I wouldn't tell another business to take on those specific values. They need to really discover what their values are that make them unique and distinctive.
Mm-hmm. What's the website address for this organization known as Energage?
So it's Energage, Energage.com.
Energage.com. We would speak with Doug Claffey, CEO of Energage, here on Executive Leaders Radio. We'll be back in a moment right after this break. And don't forget to visit our website. It's executiveleadersradio.com. That's executiveleadersradio.com. And again, we'll be back in a moment right after this break. And your name is?
Ethan Milrod.
And Ethan, what's the name of your organization?
It's called GoTo.
Why is it called GoTo?
It's a little play on words. We're a single technology source for our clients' voice, data, and video solutions. Anything that touches your network, we handle as an objective advocate.
Wait. Give me that again. So when you, who are your typical clients, and what are you doing for them?
Really, anyone that needs a technology. If you have phones and you have computers and you have network that needs implementation and support, we do it all.
So when you go into a business, who are you typically talking to in the business, and what are you talking to them about?
Typically, we're talking to the business owner, and we're talking to them about the need to have objective advocacy when it comes to technology. We always found that companies would tend to have three or four so-called go-to vendors, when in reality, they tended to be more like widget sellers trying to fit a square peg in a round hole, and they needed to have a true objective advocate on their side.
I guess the other issue would be that sometimes if you have a bunch of different vendors, what their installations may do is conflict with each other.
Sure. As a business owner, imagine dealing with four or five different vendors and trying to pull it all together and integrate it all on your own. You end up pulling your hair out trying to figure it all out.
So what you're doing is going in as opposed to trying to sell something specific. You know, they can pay you a fee and you can be the objective advocate trying to make sure that everything's all integrated and working together and up to date and efficient. And am I correct about that?
Sure. I mean, technology is great, but you can't just throw it up against the wall and hope that it sticks. I mean, you have to bring it all together, and you have to be objective to your clients' needs, and you can't just, again, like I said earlier.
You're also working with your teams to help orient your teams to the different technologies that are out there, so it's not just dump and run. It's like you're really working with the team.
We are. You have to today. And today you have to be focused on customer service.
What's the website
the technology.
What's your website
it's
address?
It's gototech.com. That's gototech.com.
Let me have that one more time.
Gototech.com.
We've been speaking with Ethan Milrod, GoToTech. Back in a moment right after this break. And your name and organization?
Josh Silverbauer, Grew & Bleen.
And how do you help your clients, Josh?
We help them by organizing their data, building websites, helping them track things on their websites, and helping them with digital marketing.
So how young were you when you began playing with puzzles?
I was about 2 years old.
And what kind of puzzles did you play with, and how long did that continue for?
I started with jigsaw puzzles, and then I got into logic puzzles, and from there, cryptograms and code.
I'm wondering what did those puzzles teach you about building your business and helping your clients?
There's infinite moving pieces in life and in business, and understanding that things aren't just one way, and understanding that things move together and piece together really helped me understand how to.
I guess you're also helping your clients stay on top of the ever-changing digital landscape. What's the website address for your firm?
GrueAndBleen.com.
Give me the spelling of that real quick.
GrueAndBleen.com.
This has been your Business Spotlight. Want help building your business with help from this show's CEOs? Our CEOs can help you uncover more opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that, succeeding in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars. And some are available to advise you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. The same CEOs you've heard on the show for 10 years may be willing to help you build your business, uncover new opportunities, grow your sales, connect you, help you raise money, all the big issues, because our CEOs have been there and done that, succeeding in creating millions of jobs and earning millions of dollars. Some of the CEOs who have appeared on our shows over the last 10 years may be willing to help you grow, assuming you're serious about your success, serious about your own success, because it all starts with the leader. If you're serious about creating your own successful business, or truly committed to putting your nose to the grindstone and doing whatever it takes to make your business successful, we may be able to match you with successful CEOs who have created millions of jobs and earned millions of dollars to help you create your success. We've established unique relationships with a unique universe of over 7,000 CEOs who have created substantial wealth for their companies, their teams, and themselves. These women and men get the build in their blood and often continue to start and build businesses even after they've created substantial wealth for themselves because they love the challenge of building a business. Perhaps we can present you and your business to some of these CEOs to gain their interest in helping you. Now, email mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. That's mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. To hopefully match you with some of the CEOs we've had on the show for the last 10 years. mentors@executiveleadersradio.com. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohn. We'd like to introduce Ira Brown, Regional President of M&T Bank. Ira, what is M&T Bank?
M&T is a $120 billion regional bank. We're based out of Buffalo, New York. I run the Philadelphia and Southern New Jersey regions. We also own Wilmington Trust locally, about 17,000 employees, 300 of which reside here in Philly.
Wow. Where are you from originally?
Springfield, New Jersey.
All righty. Okay, Jeffrey, your turn.
Ira, we were talking in the green room earlier that at the age of 10, living in Springfield, New Jersey, kind of outside of Newark, you saw something on TV that you still remember. What was that, and how did it influence your career?
Sure. Well, during the late 60s, there was a lot of tension in and around Newark. There was a riot that broke out in 68. I have a recollection of tanks rolling down the street at that point, a lot of fire, a lot of destruction going on that stopped short of where I lived, but got awfully close.
And it actually touched your family. Your grandparents had a store that was destroyed in that event, right?
We did. We had a family business in East Orange, New Jersey, a retail business that served the local communities, and it was effectively put out of business at that point.
So when you're dealing with companies today at M&T and you're evaluating their situation, what do you think? Does that come to mind in part of your evaluation?
Less so today than it might have when I was a much younger banker. I think the world in some areas has made a lot of progress, so I can put what happened back then behind me. So it's a different thought process when we're looking at what makes a good loan or a good business decision.
Jennifer?
At this point today.
All right. When we were talking earlier, you said that your parents were very well-educated professionals. What did Mom and Dad do for a living?
They're both Cornell grads. My mother was Phi Beta Kappa and started in working for a large chemical and pharmaceutical manufacturer. My father was an engineer by training, ultimately ended up in the bookbinding and printing area.
How did their educational and professional success affect you in your business?
Well, they were driven to succeed, so there's no doubt my work ethic came from them. They were both very hard workers. Both were all about getting the job done and being really good at what they did.
I find it interesting. Your parents were Cornell grads. They obviously set the bar fairly high for themselves, but yet when it came to you, they didn't really have the pressure on, and they allowed you to blaze your own path, really. And I'm just curious for our listening audience, how did that make you feel and affect you?
Sure. Well, we also grew up during a very liberal time for the country as well. My parents were both liberal. They encouraged me to do whatever I wanted to do, to be whatever I wanted to be, and to sort of find my own path.
And how did that affect your leadership style today?
Well, that's a great question. We talk about that all the time when we examine ourselves as leaders. The key in my position is to be decisive and not to be indecisive, to be decisive and right as much as you can be. So the balancing act is going from when you're younger, being able to do whatever you want to do and not necessarily being forced to make a decision, to being in a position where you have to make a decision and generally be right.
Ethan?
So Ira is regional president for M&T Bank here. You don't really interact with clients, do you?
I do. That's actually one of the bigger parts of my job today and one of the more fun and challenging aspects of the job. Getting to see a lot of different companies, what they do, our business, our clients range from across multiple industries.
So how does that make you feel, making an impact on your clients?
Oh, it's great. It's what distinguishes us, my ability as well as the team's ability. Banks are, to a great degree, commodities. It's our ability as a team to distinguish ourselves from others. It's the people. It's hopefully what I can bring to them and they bring back to me that makes us different.
Peter?
I were growing up in East Orange, you came away feeling a bit wary, but you mentioned when you moved to Philadelphia, something changed. Tell us about that.
Sure. I'd be happy to. So, our bank is very active. Really, the one of the keys to our culture is being involved with the communities where we live and do business. Philly is quite a diverse community, and we have the ability, we actively go out into the market, try and interact with schools, with the arts, healthcare, across a variety of spaces to try and help as many people as we can.
Would it be safe to say you watched a community burn down and this one you're trying to build up?
That would be safe to say, a little bit at a time.
Mm-hmm. What's the best part of your job? I mean, you know, we hear a lot of stuff in the news about bankers. What do you like about your gig?
Well, hopefully you only hear good things in the news about bankers. We're a community-based bank, and it's really the way we've grown up culturally at our organization. It's all about the communities we serve. We get to know the people that we deal with. We try and understand their businesses. We're geared towards middle-market companies and real estate developers where we think we can make a difference and help move the needle. So it's that interaction at a ground level that's most interesting.
Ira, so how'd you get into banking if you studied political science, and did political science impact some of the things you're telling us today?
I was a political science major. Decided relatively early on not to become a lawyer. I ended up in banking almost by accident, and through hard work, sort of found my way from retail banking to ultimately commercial lending. Had a variety of experiences. Had some very good mentors along the way, and one thing led to another, and here I am in Philadelphia almost 30 years later.
Jeffrey, so Ira, what's special about M&T, and what's particularly special about your team?
Our bank has a great culture. Our chairman, who passed away at the end of last year, had really grown the bank from about $1 billion to our current size today, and really drove the motto of we want to be the best bank our clients ever had, the best place our employees ever work, and beyond good returns for our stakeholders.
Anthony?
Ira,
you mentioned your mom went to Cornell at a time where it wasn't common for women to go to college at that time. What do you take with you to work every day from mom?
Well, her work ethic is the easy part. I think the ability to try and break down barriers, to try and show that what you do, regardless of gender, race, ethnicity, doesn't really matter. If you're good at what you do, you should be able to distinguish yourself. And she did a good job with that.
Well, the upbringing you've had evidently shaped you. And are you involved with giving back to the community? Are you involved with giving back to the youth of our society and adults?
Today, as much as I can be, either personally or through encouraging it, within our company, we have a bar that we set where we expect minimum volunteer hours from employees. So we actively look to put ourselves in the community in a variety of ways.
So you expect, you really want the team to be involved in the community. You think it's healthy?
It's strongly encouraged at our organization.
Huh, that's interesting. And how do you personally get involved in the community?
Really in a variety of ways. We've run several educational programs in North Philly and West Philly to try and get down to kids from the fifth grade to eighth grade level. Mm-hmm. We support anti-bullying programs. We try and get at the root of some of the challenges, for example, that the Philly school system has. And I'm engaged in those programs along with my teammates.
Moving here from outside the area, Ira, what do you like most about Philadelphia?
Philly has been a very welcoming community. I was surprised to find how welcoming it was coming here from a part of an area that rooted for a different football team. So I found them to be very, very embracing, much more so than I thought they would be. It's really been a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Are you married, single?
Married 38 years.
Hey, kids?
Two girls. One lives in Chicago.
Similarity between being regional president of the bank and being a dad?
Yeah, it is totally opposite. I find that at home, my opinion is totally irrelevant. For the most part, it's finding that work-life balance.
Website address for M&T Bank?
MTB. Bank.com.
We've been speaking with Ira Brown, Regional President of M&T Bank. Jeff, can you give us a rundown on who we've had on the air
today?
Sure.
Great show today at Villanova University. Paul Ciarto, CEO of Datapella. Joe Mirabile, President and CEO of USSC Group. Doug Claffey, CEO of Energage. And just now, Ira Brown, Regional President of M&T Bank.
I would like to thank my co-hosts, including Jeff Mack, Newmark Knight Frank, Ethan Milrod, GoTo, Peter Snelling, Merrill Lynch, Andrew Hanlon, Hanlon Creative, Tim Walter, Saber Systems, Anthony Martinelli, Andis Health Benefits, Brian Sulpizio, Inception Group, Jennifer Popolak, Matt Ioni, and also Dean Russell, Villanova School of Business, for giving me a hand structure on the questions. They'll be providing our listening audience an educational and entertaining show. I'd like to thank our listening audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. Thank you, and have a nice day. Bye-bye.